Welcome to Nourish and Shine, where I talk with passionate leaders in the fields of nutrition, functional and integrative medicine, and wellness, providing inspiration and practical advice to nourish your mind, body, and spirit, optimize your health, and live a whole vibrant life starting now. Today we're talking about one of my favorite topics. We're talking about Reiki and meditation with Donna Meg Tebai. She's an RN and Reiki master and teacher. She's also a meditation coach. She has a wonderfully clear way of explaining things, which I think makes it so much more accessible. She has also recently formed a group called the Sister Seekers with two other women who are holding retreats on a number of different topics around spirituality, Reiki, and healing. These retreats are so amazing and powerful. And soon we're going to have another episode with all three sisters of the Sister Seekers together. So stay tuned for that. But today we're going to dive into Reiki and really get into the energy and how Reiki can influence your daily life. We'll talk about the five pillars of Reiki, which I find so powerful, and how Donna incorporates Reiki and meditation into her practice as well as her life. I hope you enjoy this episode. Welcome to the Nourish and Shine podcast. Today I have Donna Meg Tebai with me. She's an RN, Reiki master, and teacher. Donna, welcome. Thank you so much for being with me.
Oh, thank you very much for the invitation, Amy. I'm just so happy to do this.
It's wonderful that you're here, and I'm so excited to share all of your wonderful wisdom with everybody. So if you don't mind, could you start off just telling our listeners about yourself?
Sure. Well, I have been a nurse since 1982, which is a very, very long time. And nursing, it has those moments that you're with people and they're very intimate moments, you know, birth, death, and stress, and oftentimes in those very raw situations. And so we have to, as a nurse, go beyond just the caring of the physical. There is that emotional, that spiritual piece. I found sometimes, though, as things get very complicated, the cases get very complicated, and it's a very high-tech healthcare system that we're in, sometimes that kind of gets put off to the back burner a little bit. And I did miss that. And as I was going into my career as a nurse, I took leadership positions. And I found that I was getting even further away from patients and further away from staff. And I was spending more time on policy and that sort of thing. And so I was searching for something that would get me back in touch with that spiritual connection, that emotional connection with patients and families and things. And that's when I came across Reiki. So I've tried several things throughout the years. I'm not sure if you're aware, but it wasn't that long ago as a nurse, I would be potentially reprimanded, put into corrective action if I did anything that was similar to this type of energy healing.
So
I kind of let that go. But then when I came across Reiki again, it seemed like things were just starting to open up more. And I found that as a Reiki volunteer, I could go into the patient rooms, sit with patients, sit with family, and offer this sort of healing. And it filled that void that I was missing.
Absolutely. And that is a really neat program. I was involved with that a little bit as well. And it is at a major institution. And is sort of, I think, unique, I guess, in healthcare. I haven't heard of too many other programs, even though more are coming along. Have you heard of more programs like that?
Yeah, there are several major institutions that have a Reiki program. And especially in the cancer area, I did support an area like that. And many of the cancer programs offer some sort of complementary therapy as part of their list of things that different patients can do, or sign up for to help in their healing. And I know where I was working in the cancer center, and what I found, I think we're working in healthcare, is that people are searching. They have a trust in medical interventions in the medical system. And I think they also feel that there's more to it than just the, you know, the technical piece. And I think that's the searching that people are yearning for. And so I've found that as a nurse, it's coming into the institutions sometimes because it's the patients and families who are demanding it, not necessarily the hierarchy saying, you know, we need to do this. This is a great idea. There is some of that. There's no doubt about that, but it's more of a grassroots effort, I think.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I would definitely agree with that. And I think having that spiritual connection, and also I find Reiki, and please elaborate on this as well, is really calming and healing, and people feel great afterwards. And sometimes just taking the attention off of the reason that you maybe are there and having a few minutes of quiet can be so therapeutic.
Right. Right. And sometimes it's just a release. Mm-hmm. You don't realize how much you're holding. And I've seen this a fair number with patient families, with working with them, is they're so focused on their loved one and not thinking about themselves. And when they experience Reiki, all of that can release and download, and it's like a burden lifted for just a little bit. And then they're able to go back in the situation, kind of rejuvenated, more positive, feeling better about themselves. And there was a person recently that I did Reiki with, and he didn't even realize that he was stressed. And later he told his friend, "I think you saved my life. I didn't realize how stressed I was and how little time I was taking for myself. But once I got the Reiki, I feel so good. I forgot how I'm supposed to feel."
Oh, wow. That's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Just having that insight. So going back to kind of your beginning, so you were a nurse and mm-hmm. you love that kind of physical caring, and found that you were often caring beyond the physical and including the emotional and spiritual, but then went into leadership and were still mm-hmm. creating that, and went back and kind of got your training in Reiki. And then can you kind of go from there with your story and how you got to where you are today?
Oh, sure. I continued with Reiki as a volunteer, and I wanted to do more. I started with a practice at Northgate Chiropractic, and then also with Dan Abraham Healthy Living Center. And I started there seeing clients, and I retired early because I found that this is what nurtured me. This is what I wanted to do. I had such a sense of satisfaction of giving. So it was a different phase in my life. And then later now, recently I've started seeing clients at Lilac Wellness also. So it just seems like things unfold. And so we started with that. And then with Diane Anderson and Marie Nair, we went in, and now we are sister seekers, because we found too that people are searching for spiritual connection, for connection with each other. And so we started offering retreats, places for women to get together, to be comfortable with each other. So it's kind of just been branching.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing. And it seems like you're really kind of finding your path and doing what lights you up, which is so inspiring. And I have to say, the Sister Seekers is near and dear to my heart, because I think I've went to your last two retreats, and they have both been so amazing. And you guys have more retreats coming up, that one of them I've already registered for. But can you talk a little bit about those?
Sure. We have one coming up. I don't have the dates off the top of my head, but one on journeying to find your animal guide and or power animal. And this is great. Many people have a connection with animals and they really don't understand why am I so afraid of mice, or why am I so attracted to wolves, or things like that. And sometimes those are the animals that spiritually you align with for some reason. And if you fear them, maybe there's something, a side of you that you are not necessarily aware of or not necessarily ready to face. You don't maybe not understand the message that this animal that you're trying to learn. And then there's the power animal, which is an animal that spiritually connects with you deep, at a deep level, and it can guide you and can give you messages. If you can follow how they behave and learn from them. So that one would be taking a journey, a guided journey, to meet your power animals. And another one that we have coming up is for guardian angels, to meet your guardian angel and see if there's a message there from your angels. So there's not just one place we connect spiritually. It's with plants and animals and the earth and other spirit guides. And so this guardian angel would be going to meet your guardian angel and connecting and seeing, getting to know them a little bit. Oftentimes we're not aware of that level of communication. So can we tune into that? And is there a way that our guardian angel or our power animals, is there a way they want us to work with them, to acknowledge them, to understand them? So that's what those two workshops are. They're a couple of hours long. So in the past, we've had day-long retreats, and then we thought a couple of shorter retreats, just in the evening, you can come for a few hours and learn this. And then in October, we're having our very first overnight retreat. And so it's a community of women spending the time together, and we can go deep into nourishing ourselves and bonding with each other. And it's amazing how women they connect with each other and how quickly they go deep to the root or the core of their experience. They're very powerful. They're very fun. We do fun things. We laugh. We joke. There are tears sometimes as people release, but it's an open environment where anything can happen and everything is supported. So people tend to feel very safe there.
I would agree. That's exactly how I would describe the last couple of retreats. And I went to the Reiki one that you had recently, and it was just a really fun group of women. And I feel like you bond, like you said, so quickly, and you leave there with so much new information and just new friends, and it's a fun day. So I think it's wonderful. And so the three of you are not actual sisters, correct?
Correct.
So how did you guys come to find each other, and how did you decide to do these retreats?
Well, Diane is my Reiki master teacher. Mm-hmm. And when I was doing my Reiki master teacher training, we put on a class where Marie came. And we just, you know how you meet people and you get the feeling that you're supposed to meet them, that there's something here, but you're not quite sure what it was or what it is. And that's kind of how the three of us came to be. We would do things like drumming circle or other groups or other forms of study, and it seemed like we had very, very common interests, the shamanic work, that sort of thing. And so it seemed like it was just the three of us. And then we were talking about the yearning and how many times each of us would hear from other people, I just need to relax. I just want to reconnect. I've lost a part of myself. And we would talk about that, and then it's like, well, why don't we do something about it? And so we formed about a year ago, we formed Sister Seekers. And that's the purpose, is to find a place for women to experience those things that are just uniquely feminine, that feminine energy.
I love that. And it is such a needed experience. And I just feel so lucky that you guys created it and that I found it too.
Oh, thank you. You are just a treasure.
Thank you. So, getting back to Reiki, you mentioned that you had some experience with energy medicine. How did you exactly find Reiki? And then also, let's get into meditation too. I know you're teaching meditation now, right?
Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I coach in meditation. Well, I'm aging myself, but I went to grad school in the 90s. And I started learning about healing touch and those sorts of alternative therapies. And I enjoyed it, but it just wasn't the right time in my life. It dropped. And then, as I mentioned, when I was probably 8 years ago or so, I wanted something, but I knew it wasn't healing touch. And I tried several different things, Qigong, meditation, all these other things, and nothing quite stuck. And one day I was just flipping through brochures and flipping through the internet, like, what do I want? What do I want? And I just happened upon Reiki and I thought, that's what I want. And I registered for Diane's class and I just kept going through Reiki Master Teacher training. So it just clicked. It just felt like home. And when Diane was teaching the shamanic, it just builds. So everything I learn just broadens my awareness. And it's just so fulfilling to keep learning. And there's so many things that I want to learn, that it just never ends. And it's just fascinating to me. So that's how I really started into Reiki. I just stumbled across it and never looked back, I guess.
That's amazing. And I feel like a lot of people in this space in integrative medicine are like lifelong continual learners who just kind of crave that knowledge and keep on taking different trainings and learning. And it does seem to build. Could you talk just a little bit about the shamanic part for people who maybe aren't as aware of what shamanic healing involves? Sure. Or kind of what that all entails?
Yeah, shamanism is an ancient form of spiritual work of healers. And they were in every continent, and every indigenous tribe had some sort of like a medicine person or a visionary or someone who was in charge of the spiritual life of the community, as well as the healing part. So the shamanic tradition believes that injury or illness has an energetic component, which I think all of us are starting to come to believe that there is an energetic emotional component to it. And we need to find out what is that component and can we touch that? Can we heal that in order to bring healing? And the big part of it is everything has a soul. Everything has an energy. Rocks, Mother Earth, the trees, the plants, the animals, the sky, the air, the fire, all of that has its own unique spirituality and or spiritual component. And so it's a very ancient practice. And that's where the journeying comes from. It's the drumming that puts kind of that rhythmic sound, connects with your brain, with your heart, and then you're able to journey or go to another area and find your power animals. So it's that sort of tradition. And like I mentioned, it's on every continent. And I think it's starting to make more of a comeback, if you will. We hear more and more about the shamanic teachings and people are coming forward more, I guess, than they had been in the past. So it's kind of making a resurgence like many of the other traditions, healing traditions.
Very cool. And do you incorporate that with your Reiki practice then?
Yes, we do. I think like anyone, when you learn something, you're like, oh, I'm just going to add that to it. So and with Reiki, there are stones and crystals that use Reiki, but then you also pull in the shamanic piece of drawing the energy into the stones and which sorts of stones, using plants to help move energy. That sort of thing, you can bring it into any healing session. So there are many, I bring Qigong in, we bring in meditation, I bring in stress management, mindfulness, I bring in everything into my healing, because it's, what is it that you feel the client needs, and what is it that you can pull out of the back of your mind, what can you bring out that would help meet that need, or best meet that need?
Absolutely. So kind of using all the tools in your toolbox. And I think that's great. And patients or clients appreciate that as well.
Mm-hmm. Right.
As a personal plant lover, could you elaborate on moving energy with plants and how you use that in your practice?
Oh, sure. So there are different plants. If you connect with a plant, you can bring in fresh herbs or a fresh plant. And as you feel a blockage, place the plant over it and then like swipe the area to move it down the arm or to release it or to break it up. You could pat the area to kind of break up the energy and to release it. And then you get also oftentimes that fragrance of the plant that is very wonderful. Aspect of healing too is just smelling it, especially like mint or other herbs like that have that fragrance to it.
Oh yeah, absolutely. That's really cool. I haven't heard of that before, but I love it.
Mm-hmm.
So as far as the meditation piece goes, can you talk to me about that? I know you're doing some teaching around meditation as well, correct?
Correct. So I got training as a meditation coach. And how I got into meditation was several years ago, I did research with Dr. Sood and on stress management and resiliency training. And part of that was part of that mindfulness or part of building resilience incorporated meditation. So that's another, how you learn one thing and it leads to the next, to the next, to the next. And so I started coaching with meditation. So what kind of meditations, simple meditations can people use? And there is Reiki meditation, the Gesao meditation. There's also guided meditations. And that's often the one I coach with the most because I think that's the easiest for people to learn. You relax, you listen, and you come back. So that's often the one, the go-to one until people can kind of learn to quiet their mind. It's a little easier. The binaural meditation, that one's very easy also where you have headphones. So it's slightly it's two tones slightly different, one in the right ear and one in the left ear. And what that does is it syncs with the brain waves. So you can move the brain waves between alpha, beta, theta, delta waves, depending on what you're searching for. So if you want to sleep, you might want to go into the delta. That one is very, people enjoy that kind also. And then progressing to just being quiet, either with music or with nature, or how do you listen and quiet your mind? So that's a lot of what I do with the meditation. I think people think it's, and it is not very easy. It's not easy to quiet the mind. But are there simple things that we can teach to help people with the meditation?
What are some simple things or a few little pearls around that you do share with your clients?
Sure. Well, the main thing that I don't know, I must be a very slow learner, It took me years before I really understood that the mind is not designed to be quiet. So I thought, you know, there should be no thinking. Well, the brain doesn't work that way. So it's common to be interrupted by thought every few seconds. And then gradually over time, those few seconds become 4 seconds, 5 seconds, a little longer. And it's that time of quiet. That's what you're kind of trying to get toward. So just understanding that it takes a while and that your brain, it's acting normally or behaving normally if your mind wanders, and to be gentle with yourself if your mind wanders. The importance of breath. In our culture, we tend to breathe from our chest, which is a stress breathing. How do you breathe instead from your abdomen, which is the relaxed breathing, and the importance of connecting with that breath? And that's why oftentimes you'll hear, if your mind wanders, return to your breath. Pay attention to the breath. And many traditions, yoga is one where you do your asanas or your movements according with the breath. It's that connection to breath, how important that is. Just simple things about how to set up a meditation practice, just being in a quiet place, turning off your phone. If you can, do it at the same time every day so it becomes a habit. And if you don't do it, you miss it. Little things like that that could make it easier. You don't think you have to go into full lotus position and, you know, when you're first learning. It takes time. You need to, your body physically has to be able to sit that long. And if you sit cross-legged or whatever position that you're in, it does take time for the body, the muscles to release and then strengthen so that you can sit in a seated position for a period of time.
I think that's a really important point too, is it's not, everyone thinks of meditation as like relaxing, but when you are sitting kind of on the floor in an upright position, it can get uncomfortable when you sit there for a while. So yeah, kind of getting comfortable with sitting is a big piece of it. And of course, quieting your mind to some degree.
Yes, that's a key too.
Yeah. Not things you need to do or whatever.
Right. And oftentimes, well, I'll just lay. Well, if you lay and meditate, oftentimes you fall asleep. And sometimes that is your goal and that's okay. But if you're trying to understand something or gain insight into something, or if you're trying to do some cleansing or clearing of blockages or whatever with a chakra meditation, you need to be upright. You can't fall asleep during that sort of work.
Absolutely. And I think there is something about the energy flow when you're sitting up versus lying down and having the spine and the chakras like aligned, upright, definitely is a different energy.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. For sure.
Yeah. And the breathing part too is so powerful. I was just talking with someone recently about how much emotion can be stored in the breath as well. Mm-hmm. Like in yoga, we talk about the breath as prana and kind of energy being very connected. But also, I think with that, a lot of times people have a lot of emotion. And when you start deep breathing, it can bring up some stuff. Mm-hmm. So being mindful about that and, you know, taking it slow and just kind of exploring and having a beginner's mind.
Perfect. That's a great way to put it. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So, as far as Reiki goes, I know there's 5 pillars in Reiki and I think they're really cool. Could you just talk a little bit about those and explain those to the listeners?
Oh, sure. So Reiki, was founded by Master Usui. And one of the core components is that recipients need to take responsibility or accountability for part of their healing. So he listed the 5 principles to live by. So they're not only, it could be part of your healing is you need to change your beliefs. You need to change your environment somewhat. So it's taking that sort of responsibility. And so it not only goes to the recipients of Reiki, but also as a healer or someone who does Reiki, you're held to a higher spiritual vibration or a higher level of spirituality. You need to continue to strive toward becoming a better person or the highest part of yourself as you can. And so there are five Reiki principles, and that it starts with just for today. And I think that just for today is so important, because just for today reminds us we need to live in the present. Don't worry about the future. Don't ruminate about the past, but to live your life in the present moment. And also that there's a sense of forgiveness, a sense of compassion with just for today. So just for today, try to do it. And if you fail, try again tomorrow. Or if you do well, continue. What can you build on for tomorrow? You know, we all have those ups and downs. So just for today, can you try it? Something, it may seem like, you know, if I'm going to do this for 40 days, it may be somewhat intimidating. I have to change my life. That's somewhat intimidating. What about, could you just do it for today? So I think that's very important. And so it's just for today, I will let go of anger. Anger is a very natural emotion, and we would do harm in suppressing that emotion. But just for today, could I let go of anger? Could I react differently? Because oftentimes we're responsible and we can change how we react to things. So can we look at what are those triggers, and can we react differently, learn a different way to do it? Not suppress the anger, but to understand it and hopefully delay it in that bit of a moment before we react. Can we fill that moment with love and compassion? Just for today, I will not worry. Worry really doesn't get us anywhere. It's like, I think 96 to 98% of what we worry about never comes true. So not only does worry set us up, doesn't get us anywhere, it also increases our stress and decreases the amount of time that we spend in the present moment, because we are worrying about what could happen rather than what living our life in the present moment. Just for today, I will have gratitude for my many blessings. And there is a lot of research about how powerful a gratitude practice is. Focusing on gratitude and the blessings we have takes our mind off what we don't have. And it tends to make us feel as if I have plenty, so I can give to others. I can help others. So it makes us more compassionate. Understanding that we have blessings. Just for today, I will do my work honestly. So when you go to work, whatever your work may be, if it is a caregiver, if it's a job, you earn money, if it's volunteering, if it's parenting, whatever that is, I will do it to the best of my ability just for today. Be in the present again with what you're doing. Is what you're doing, can you find meaning in what you're doing? Can you apply it to the greater good? What aspect of what you do helps mankind or humankind? And it also includes doing my work honestly, it also includes doing work on myself. Am I taking a look truly at myself? And what can I do better? How can I grow? Not be afraid of the dark, if you will, the dark side, or the shadow side that all of us have, and that's where our greatest lessons are. But I can be honest with my shortcomings. I can be honest with myself, my strengths. And then lastly, just for today, I will show kindness to every living thing. So it, again, is that compassion, that love. We deserve kindness from others. We give kindness to others. And it could be we don't waste resource. We don't litter. We show kindness to Mother Earth. We show kindness to other people, to the plants and the animals, and with the understanding that we're all on our spiritual journey together. And would we rather react in kindness than in anger or hostility? So those are the five principles, and there's only five, but when you truly take a look at it, it's somewhat intimidating because they're not necessarily easy to do every day.
That's so true. How do you suggest people work with those or work around those?
Mm-hmm. Well, what I did when I first learned them is I put sticky notes because I tend to forget. I need cues. And it would be just for today, I will do this. And try. And that's about all you can do. That meditation, that reflection, oftentimes that is a very good thing to sit down and pay attention to what happened and why am I reacting like that? What can I do differently? How can I be better? So maybe just carving out one day a week, like on Sunday or a day of quiet, that I'm going to look at where I want to be and am I getting there? And if you find yourself falling short, which I do every single day, be gentle and try again. Over time, you'll find it's easier and easier to live by the principles because it becomes a way of life. It may be a struggle to start out, but it becomes a way of life, which is what it was intended to be. It's a way of living at more love and compassion, at a higher spiritual vibration, perhaps. And that's what we're striving toward, or some of us are striving toward.
Yeah, I love those. And that's when I heard those in our Reiki training, it's something that just really resonated with me. And it's one of those things as a parent too, I feel like, oh my gosh, if I can just teach my kids those few things, like you're doing really good.
Oh, absolutely. You have well-adjusted children. I think His Holiness the Dalai Lama has said that if we could teach every 8-year-old how to meditate, we would eliminate anger and wars in one generation.
Hmm.
And that's what this kind of is.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you're seeing it a little more in schools and with children. But there's definitely room to grow there too. Do you do any meditation teaching with children at all or younger people?
Not outside of just the children in my little community or, you know, my family area.
Sure.
I don't often, but it's very easy. You know, they talk about how to build mindfulness in children. And oftentimes that's a type of meditation, you know, just sitting and paying attention and have them do one thing at a time. When they're angry, recognize it. How do you settle yourself? How do you take your breaths? Just those little pieces with children, and over time they grow. Understanding, you know, how would this person feel? Can you understand why that person feels this way or why you feel this way? And a very one that I've done that children can resonate with, because it's very simple, is if they can sit quietly and then they picture a balloon and all of the anger, the hurt, the sadness, they blow into this balloon. They just imagine this balloon expanding and expanding and expanding, and then in their chest, and then when they're ready, let your balloon go and watch the balloon fly away. It's something very simple for children, because children love balloons, or bubbles would be another way to do it. You know, blow bubbles, and can you blow your hurt into the bubbles? Things like that.
Oh, yeah.
We need time to process or to meditate. And I think oftentimes we're so busy and we keep our children so busy that we don't allow that time.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I love, you shared a story about your son. I think talking about after your Reiki retreat, you were thinking of retiring.
Oh.
I'm going to share that story because it was the cutest story.
Yes. So when I retired early, I retired almost 5 years ago. And my youngest, oh man, it was longer than that, it must be. Anyway, my oldest was in college. My oldest son was in college, and my youngest son hadn't started college yet. He was still in high school. And I was talking with my oldest son one day, and I said, you know, I am going to retire. He goes, what do you mean? And I said, I'm going to retire, and I'm going to start a business where I teach Reiki, meditation, and stress management. And he said, Mom, have you thought about this? Have you thought this through? And he goes, don't make any decisions when you're all hopped up on Reiki. You have to think about things. And I had never heard about anyone being hopped up on Reiki, but he made his point.
I love that. I think that's just the cutest story. And it seems like it was a good decision, even though you were hopped up on Reiki.
It was. He now will admit that it was a good thing for me to do. And but at the time, he just was not sure if I had thought things through and was I aware of my, you know, like I was going to abandon them or something. I don't know what he was thinking. I'd go live in an ashram or something. I don't know what he was thinking.
Oh my goodness. Are your kids, as far as like teaching Reiki and everything, do you do Reiki with your family or your pets, or has it incorporated into your personal life at all?
What's ironic is my immediate family are not, they're not really big. My husband and two sons are, when I first started, they were not into it at all. They were like, if that's what you want to do, that's fine. But I am not into that. Oh, here's another funny story. When my boys were younger, I would chase them around the house with my hands out. I'm going to Reiki you. And they would scream and run. And that was like a little game that we used to play. But now as they are older and we're going to college and into some stressful periods of time, I would say, do you want me to send you Reiki? Because one of the tenets of Reiki is you don't give someone Reiki unless they are okay with it or they request it or they assent to it. You just don't sneak up on somebody and do Reiki, if you will. And so I would say, do you want me to send you some Reiki, distance Reiki? And they're like, okay, we'll just try it. And then what's interesting is my son, who was concerned about being hopped up on Reiki, when he is stressed, he will call me and say, Mom, I could use a little energy. Could you send a little energy my way? So it's opening that way. Other people in my family that they were very, they were quite negative about it and they would tease me about it. I've done Reiki with them and changed their minds about Reiki. And now they will ask for Reiki. And what's interesting is I have four sisters and three of us are already either level two or Reiki master teacher. And a fourth sister now is going to learn Reiki this weekend.
Oh, so cool.
Yeah. So my whole family were really embracing Reiki and the benefits of Reiki. They can see the difference. And so it's little small pieces. You plant the seed and then over time, it's a very ripe time now. I think people are searching, and I think that's why we're seeing so much of this type of work coming forward.
Absolutely. I 100% agree with that. And it's kind of neat that the people in your lives are coming to it like in their own way. Mm-hmm. And kind of when it's right for them, like we're not shoving Reiki down everyone's throat. Like you said, we have to ask permission to give Reiki. And I think, like you said, once people experience it, it can really open your eyes and kind of change your mind about what it is.
Yes, one of my favorite things is about doing Reiki is when I worked at Dan Abraham, and there are very scientific minds that come to Reiki. And at the end, they will say, I don't understand this. I know how I feel, but I don't understand it. I don't understand how it works, but they come back. They know how they feel. They know the benefit. And some of it is perhaps you don't need to understand.
That's such a good point. Absolutely. So as far as your own kind of daily practices, would you mind sharing maybe a couple of things that really are valuable to you that you do on a daily basis?
Sure. I practice gratitude every morning before I get up. Either I do some sort of gratitude meditation. If I didn't sleep well, then how can I send gratitude to that area if I wake up with a headache or a crink in my neck? And just wake up with the feeling of how blessed I am, which kind of sets the tone for my day. And then I always typically do either some sort of healing work, so like Qigong to open my energy paths, or release the anger or whatever the emotions that I may or may not recognize. Or I do self-Reiki. I do chakra work. I do typically something like that where I deliberately try to do a sort of healing on myself. And then in the evening, to wind down, I do an evening meditation to help me close everything that happened during the day. And then if it's been a really stressful day, I'll do it earlier so that I can enjoy the evening with my family. If it's been a kind of a relaxed day, I'll wait and do meditation closer to bedtime. And so I fall asleep easier when I do that sort of thing. So that's typically what I do intentionally.
I love
it. But I think, and you are like this too, you tend to live your life with awareness.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just one thing. It's just, can I be aware?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. When you talk about doing chakra work on yourself, can you explain that a little bit?
Mm-hmm. So, excuse me, chakras are their main seven main energy centers in our bodies. And they run along our spine from the root, which is at the bottom of the spine, through the top of the head. And each one of the chakras correspond physically with this part of the body. It corresponds with a gland, endocrine gland, and also has an emotional, spiritual component to it. And they develop as we develop our personalities. So oftentimes it goes... the lowest chakra is related to our sense of security, our sense of family, how we fit into our family, what we learn from our family. And that's why it's that foundational piece. So, and then as you grow older, then it's how do I fit into the world around me? How do I have my own sense of personal power? Where do I fit in? Where's my voice? Those sorts of things. So each of the chakras develops as we develop as people, as humans. So there are ways that if there's a blockage or maybe just needs a little energy perking up, then just send energy to that area. And you can balance it with sound. There's different notes or toning, mantra, color, meditations, foods. There's multiple ways to balance chakras. What I do is a meditation with chakras. So I picture the color in each that's associated with each chakra. And then I may say an affirmation to it. I am safe. I am whole. I am protected. I am where I need to be. I release fear. I release anger. And then I move up. I feel joy. I picture orange. I feel joy. I have creativity. I enjoy moving my body. Those sorts of things. And that's what I do when my type of chakra work. I know some people in the shower, as they cleanse their bodies, they cleanse their chakras and their auras. There's many different ways to do it.
I love that. And that's, everyone has their own unique things, which I love to hear about. So thank you for sharing that. So I ask everybody this, what does nourish mean to you?
Nourish. Me personally, I try to give myself what I want to give other people, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. I think I may be like many people where I tend to be harder on myself than I am on others. I tend to be more forgiving with other people than I am with myself, more loving toward other people than I am with myself, more accepting of other people. So every day I try to nourish myself by giving myself what I would give my best friend. The love, the compassion, forgiveness, the talk. I try not to say something to myself that I would not tell my best friend. Taking the time to do what I need to do and honor myself. If I don't feel up to, I don't know, doing an activity, why is that? Is there a reason? And if there's a reason, then I give myself permission not to do it. So I think for me, that's how I nourish myself, is to take the time, and that was at least 2 to 3 times a day, where I just take the time for myself, either through meditation or Reiki or Qigong or another type of practice. Even though I'm busy, and it may seem selfish to others that you're going to do that now, you're going to take an hour now. If I don't take an hour now, I feel worse, and I'm not there for anyone else. So that's, I think, my definition of nourishing, is understanding what I need and then taking steps to try to meet that need.
I love that. And that's a perfect definition in my mind of just honoring like your intuition and your body and your needs, and truly is nourishing. And I love everyone's different definitions, but they're all so like spot on, I think.
Okay. There's a little bit of truth in everything, isn't there?
Yeah, exactly. So this has just been wonderful. And I just have one last question. I know people are going to love everything you shared and want to connect with you and learn more about the retreats. What's the best way for our listeners to connect with you?
Sure. People can email me. And my email is Magtibay, which is not easy to spell, but it's Magtibay 1111@gmail.com. I also have a website that I will be putting up soon, just DonnaMagtibay.com, or come to sisterseekers.net and check out everything that Sister Seekers are doing.
Wonderful. And I will put all of that in the show notes so everyone can find it.
Thank you so much for listening to Nourish and Shine. I hope that you enjoy this episode and that you'll leave me a review on iTunes so that more people can hear the podcast. I'd also love to connect with you on social media. You can find me on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. I would love to hear your questions, so please send them my way. Also, you can check out my website. It's amysopola.com. I hope that today's interview provided you with some inspiration and practical advice to nourish your mind, body, and spirit, optimize your health, and to live a whole, vibrant life. Please join me again next week for another amazing interview. Have a wonderful week. The information provided on this podcast is for educational purposes only. It's not intended to diagnose or treat any disease or condition. Please do not apply any of this information without first speaking with your medical provider.